Well, now, home entertainment was my baby's wish, so I hopped into town for a satellite dish. I tied it to the top of my Japanese car. I came home and I pointed it out into the stars. A message came back from the great beyond. It's 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
This is Peace Talks, the series on nonviolent conflict resolution and peacemaking. I'm Suzanne Kreider. Today, the media and peacemaking, part two. Last time in part one, we began the discussion by asking, what impact does media have on our ability to resolve conflict in our daily lives? Does violence on TV, in movies, and video games reinforce only violent solutions to conflict? And what about so-called reality shows? What do they teach about resolving conflict? First, some excerpts from part one, a portion of which was recorded at the first annual Media and Consciousness Conference sponsored by the Institute of Noetic Sciences in May 2004 in Santa Barbara, California. Here is the Institute's president, James O'Dea.
The impact is inestimable in some ways, and I think we're all at this point beginning to realize that it's probably far, far greater than we imagined.
Our panel also included television producer Bellevue Rooks.
By the time a child is 12, they've seen 8,000 murders on television. That, to me, is fairly astonishing in terms of shaping consciousness. So I'm not sure how we can expect that somehow embedded in that message is not violence.
And this is media activist and author Dwayne Elgin.
The mainstream media is appealing to our most base instincts, a concern for threat and violence, as a way to hook us into their programming.
In the first program, we added comments from a June 2004 studio interview with Bob McCannon, executive director of the New Mexico Media Literacy Project.
The media never tell parents to what extent the research shows the level that watching violence makes kids more aggressive and, more importantly, desensitizes them to the pain and suffering of others. The research on that is just mind-boggling.
And Leon Potts, who writes about pop culture for the Albuquerque Journal.
I think you learn conflict resolution skills from many sources. Media is one. It's a powerful one. I think you need to, if you're not making the human connections in your lives, to learn some of this, the fault is with you. I mean, there are other ways to learn your resolution than what Rupert Murdoch tells you or what, you know, a newspaper headline writer tells you or what Dan Rather tells you. I mean, come on. The world's a lot bigger than that. That's just crazy. You can't make Fox TV or Donald Trump or the producers of any of these shows responsible for the segment of the population that's that clueless.
Last time, we described conflict resolution messages that are prevalent in the existing media landscape. Today on Peace Talks, we'll ask, can the media make compelling content that might deepen our ability to resolve conflict nonviolently? We'll also explore what media consumers can do if they want to promote change in the media that they and their children are exposed to. Let's go back to our panel at the Noetic Sciences Conference with Bellevue Rooks, Dwayne Elgin, and James O'Dea.
Well, let's talk about solutions. James, you've said we are close to seeing an emergence of a more compassionate and globally conscious audience determined to see a better reflection of its true values in the media. All right, so if you believe we're close, when is the tipping point going to occur, and what do we need to do to see the shift in the media?
I think the media needs to see the shift in us. I can't say precisely how it will happen, because what we can say is that the world view upon which the media has built its structure is a house of cards. It is built on an unsustainable value system. It is interesting, I think, also at this point that during the peak of the war frenzy, people were referring to the trance-like quality of the media, that it really had this quality of sucking people in. Now people are talking about the media as feeling somewhat schizophrenic The New York Times is just making an apology about the fact that it really wasn't doing its homework and that it in some ways participated. So those are cracks and fault lines in the framework of meaning, because I think has been pointed out, hypocrisy and lies will surface. It may take a while, but it will be revealed. I can't say how the media will be transformed at this point, but I can say that the world views that it is based upon are ones that are really clearly unsustainable and having their last hurrah.
And Belvy Rooks, you work with Danny Glover's production company, and you're producing media that's showing values of care, compassion. How is that working? What are y'all doing?
Well, I just want to say one thing related to what James just said, which was just about the cracks and the faults. Because whenever I read the trade magazines, I'm greatly encouraged, because there's a scramble every year to try and come up with some programming that works. Now, the good news about that is it's like it's not working. You know, it's working a little bit, but we're not even getting the income that we got last season on these shows, because fewer people are watching and they've gotten bored really quickly. So that's the good news. As I said, the show that that you talked about, actually, the Courage show, which Reader's Digest named as one of the top 10 inspirational shows for that year. These were, as I said, ordinary people doing extraordinary things. You know, we do film and we do television. We're in the process of, I'm in the process of developing something now. As many of you may or may not know, you're going to be hearing a lot about Albert Einstein in the year 2005. In fact, 2005 is going to be the year of Einstein. It's the 100th anniversary of three of his major theories. And so I've just optioned a book called The Einstein File, J. Edgar Hoover's Secret War Against Albert Einstein. The largest part of Einstein's file had to do with his civil rights activities. Not many people know that he was a co-chair of the anti-lynching campaign along with Paul Robeson. So I was feeling that this was an opportunity within the general media hype to develop something else for television. And so it's just kind of, how do you find the cracks in this kind of monolithic kind of media outlet, or, you know, to make some statements, not huge, you know, but small statements.
Television producer Belvy Rooks and Institute of Noetic Sciences president James O'D. We'll listen to more from that panel in a moment, but next we'll hear from Leanne Potts of the Albuquerque Journal and Bob McCannon, who directs the New Mexico Media Literacy Project. They were recorded in June 2004 in the KUNM studios. I'm wondering if media about nonviolent conflict resolution could be made sexy or could be made entertaining. Could there be a reality TV show that shows people how to mediate conflict in the workplace or helps people learn how Aboriginal tribes resolve conflict, and it would be really exciting and everybody be talking about it?
There's a sitcom on CBS, Joan of Arcadia. What is it? It's got very strong Christian leanings, but it's about a young woman who's in high school. It's kind of like a, it would be a WB show, except that it's on CBS and has this Christian setting, and she resolves the conflicts of being a teen through faith. And it was a hit this past fall with young people. It did real well. So obviously CBS found a way in that situation.
See, I agree with that wholeheartedly. There is no doubt that the people that control our media could make nonviolent or conflict resolution or positive shows very, very interesting, and they could get high ratings. However, Hollywood is composed of about five huge global media monopolies, and they don't want to take risks. They have to follow surefire, tried and true formulas when it comes to program creation, which is why we see Lethal Weapon 1, Lethal Weapon 2, Lethal Weapon 3, and, you know, how far is it going to go? You know, Stallone is talking about making, I don't know, Rocky 10 or whatever it is now. Hollywood does not want to take risks. They want to use the tried and true formulas of sex, drugs, alcohol, rock and roll, and violence to sell stuff to people. Look at Finding Nemo. Look at some of the biggest blockbusters of all time. They have been absolutely wonderful shows that have had very positive messages. But most of the, you know, the grade B movies being turned out and even grade A movies are following the old tried and true formula of promoting violence.
We live in an age when technology is threatening the hegemony of those giant studios, though. There's a lot of tiny little films being made that are getting attention. And the studios know it. They're trying to buy up a lot of these little movie companies that are making their own films that don't follow the formula. They're low budget. They don't follow the cliche. They don't have a star. There's no explosions, no special effects. I mean, if you look at this last slate of Oscar nominees, we had Lost in Translation got nominated for Best Picture, Best Director. I mean, did you see that film? It's about as un-Hollywood as it gets. Yeah, it was made by a Coppola, but totally un-Hollywood film. Nobody got killed. Nobody died. Nobody slept with anybody. It was just about two people connecting intellectually. Unfortunately, these huge companies that Bob spoke of still also control a lot of the distribution that goes to the theater, so it's hard to get the work out there.
We, the New Mexico Media Literacy Project, were involved from ground zero with the Taos Talking Picture Festival, and through that I got to meet literally dozens and dozens of independent film producers. And I will guarantee you that they say almost to a person that diversity in the movies and the opportunity to produce independent films has been reduced dramatically in this era of media consolidation and the creation of giant global media monopolies.
Leanne Potts, what can media consumers do to change the face of media, to see more representation in all media of peacemaking values?
Vote with your dollars, first and foremost. Don't go see Rocky 12. Don't go see Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Don't watch Fox News Network. You know, I mean, don't vote with your dollars. That's the language these people understand. And, you know, go see the movies you do care about, that do represent values you want to see your children and your children to see.
And how about in terms of print media? Is there anything consumers can do?
Once again, vote with your dollars. Write your paper. Write them and tell them what you want to see. Call them. Tell them what you don't want to see. Same with your local TV station. You know, participate.
Bob McCannon, what can media consumers do to change the face of media?
Well, I certainly agree with Leanne's notion of voting with your dollars. And I think that too often people are so passive when they consume media. Take an activist stand. We've had 960 people take our 4-day catalyst training, and we've tried to get each one of those people to write letters, not only of things they disagree with, but write letters of things that they agree with.
Yes, by all means. We always hear people who are unhappy, but if you're happy, write.
For example, it's been shown that if you write a letter saying that I really loved this whatever, Touched by an Angel episode, this episode of Law and Order that really taught me something about the legal system. Well, those positive letters have about 10 times the effect of negative letters. Internet can be a terrific way. Most people belong to listserv nowadays. And we have had our catalysts stop an amazing number of outrageous things simply by getting lots of emails generated to certain corporations that were doing outrageous things. The airlines used to always play R-rated movies in the main cabin of the airlines. And one of our catalysts, Diane Samples from Connecticut, she started an email campaign. And within a month, she shut that down. And you don't have little kids watching R-rated movies in the main cabin of airplanes now. So whatever the odds are, I think that we have to become activists nowadays, especially in this crucial issue of peace versus war and images of peace or images of war being the dominant ones in not only our culture but in our little kids' heads.
Bob McCannon of the New Mexico Media Literacy Project in conversation with Albuquerque Journal columnist Leanne Potts. I'm Suzanne Kreider, and you're listening to Peace Talks, the series that explores peacemaking efforts and nonviolent conflict resolution strategies. Today we're hearing the second of a two-part program exploring the role the media might play in shaping our attitudes about dealing with conflict. Some of our content today was recorded during a panel discussion at the Media and Consciousness Conference in May 2004 that included author and activist Dwayne Elgin, James O'Dea, the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and television producer Belvie Rooks. I asked that panel to describe new programs or models that would offer more diverse examples of conflict resolution and that might have a positive impact on our own daily encounters with conflict. Here's Dwayne Elgin.
One media model I would like to see is, in the Middle East or in Northern Ireland or a place of great conflict, I would like to see, let's take the Middle East, a 24-hour television and radio channel that would allow both sides a continuous platform for being heard, continuously. And the only agreement is that it would be available to all sides in the conflict. So 24 hours a day, there would be, you could turn on the TV set maybe there in the Palestinian-Israeli area, and you would see conversation, dialogue, continuously going on. We can afford to do this. It's technologically very feasible, but socially it would just open up the scope of conversation for dialogue and transcending the physical violence. That would be one suggestion.
Belvie?
One of the things that I would really like to see is something that involved young people more in the producing and creating of some of the things that we're talking about, some of the issues, some of the problems. I'd love to have them have cameras and go out and talk to their peers about these problems and to produce them in a way that's kind of MTV-like in that it gets their attention, but the content is different.
James O'Dea?
The media is so full of reporting officialdom and the official point of view that you know, a media centered more simply on the voice of citizens in various places around the world, I think would be extraordinary. What we know is that people with conflicting narratives, Israelis, Palestinians, and so on, will fight out their various narratives of history in a prolonged and bloody way, but in projects such as that, as the Compassionate Listening Project, they've discovered that if you can sit an Israeli and a Palestinian together to listen to each other's stories for long enough, they see such and experience such a common weave of humanity. And it's, I think, a media that somehow elevates those stories. We have really heard enough from the official representatives, and to be able to hear more of the lived stories of people in various parts of the world, I think would do a great deal to elevate our consciousness.
That was James O'Dea, president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. We had a studio audience for our taping at the Noetic Sciences Media and Consciousness Conference in May 2004. Here are some questions from a few audience members.
Hi, my name is William. I consider myself to be strongly pro-peace as opposed to anti-war. But I also notice that the media feels, at least to me, to have a rather pro-war position. And I'm wondering if you feel that the media has a conflict of interest in reporting pro-peace information. And if so, is it in advertising or is it in programming?
Dwayne Elgin?
In my estimation, the media is strongly biased in terms of, let's say, pro-war reporting, both in the programming of news as well as in the programming of entertainment. And if you think about, well, what is peace-oriented programming? Well, live peacefully on this planet, we're going to have to live sustainably, and that means looking at inequities. Looking at those inequities fly right in the face of our high-consumption lifestyle that's advertised with an avalanche of advertising every day. So immediately, just with that one thematic area, it challenges the appropriateness of our television culture. So we have a huge shift to make towards programming that looks at the, as I mentioned earlier, racial stereotypes, the status and role of women, the elderly, future generations, other species, and so on. We're not attending to those. So currently, we do not have a peacemaking media. We have a media that ignores the requirements of peacemaking and really promotes an unconscious violence towards the world.
My name's Martha, and it seems that we're all in agreement that there is a need for getting these messages of peace and sustainability to a global audience. I would like to ask where you see the economic support coming from for these messages. Do you think that a new generation of corporations, the green businesses, will support these? Or do you think that we need a means for direct popular support, similar to the NPR and PBS models, or a combination, or something else?
Belvie Rooks?
I think that's a really good question, and I actually was speaking about that earlier today, because given the reality, just the economic reality, advertising and is just a reality and something that we have to live with during this transitional period as we are moving towards something else, public financing or whatever. And I do think that some kind of model that includes green businesses, organic businesses, because, you know, there is this rise and has been this rise of organic businesses and new paradigm entrepreneurs who hopefully would want to support the kind of programming that we're trying to get on the air. And given the financial, costs, it would seem that some kind of conglomerate or coalition or, some of these businesses kind of pooling their resources to support some of this programming ought to be something that we ought to be really looking at. Because it's not that these businesses don't exist. They need the exposure. You know, it's an opportunity for exposure. And so I do think that some sort of green business, organic business, futurist, visionary, somehow we have to start putting our money where our hearts are.
I agree that there's a new generation of sustainable businesses that is emerging as potential advertisers. I think a second source are the information-based companies. We're moving into the information era, and the IBMs, Apples, and telephone companies and all the rest can have a stake in a future that facilitates communication and conversation, and they can take their stand in favor of that. So that's a strong ally, but it has yet to strongly emerge. And then thirdly, at a government level, we can afford this. We can afford just a radical transformation of our funding of telecommunications in this society if we want, but it's currently mired in politics, and that's where I think a politics of consciousness and media can help move this ahead, and that's one area is federal funding.
Media activist and author Dwayne Elgin. As we closed our two sessions on media and peacemaking, we asked each of our guests to describe the key idea to leave us with. Bob McCannon of the New Mexico Media Literacy Project first.
Well, in Albuquerque, we just had a really significant event. A lot of people came out to testify before the Federal Communications Commission. And those people all realize that when five global corporations control 80 to 90% of the global mainstream information, that they are eliminating diversity of thought and opinion in our media culture. People are starting to realize that one person ought to own one station, one person ought to own one newspaper. One person shouldn't own a newspaper and a TV station and a radio station, much less 1,250 radio stations, where they can determine what's said and what's not said.
Leanne Potts, who writes about pop culture for the Albuquerque Journal, had this advice for people who expect more than violent messages from the media.
Once again, don't go see movies, don't watch TV, don't buy publications that depict violence that you find abhorrent. Do not support them. If you have children or you have nieces and nephews, talk to them about what they're seeing. Tell them why it's bad. Talk to them about other ways. Tell them that, you know, watching people get killed for 2 hours is not entertainment, that it's repulsive. It's not good to be entertained by people being hurt. I mean, talk to one another. Don't just passively sit there and soak this stuff up. And don't throw up your hands and say, well, I can't do anything. You know, as far as the print, you know, write letters, get on the web. Just get involved. Get off the sofa and get involved.
And we asked each of our panelists at the Noetic Sciences Conference what they thought was the most important step to improve the relationship between media and peacemaking. First, Duane Elgin, followed by Belvie Rooks and James O'Dea.
It would be to take back the airwaves and to tell our own authentic and true stories.
For me, it would include greater diversity and complexity in terms of the stories that we tell and who's included and who we mean when we, who's included when we say we, to expand as a way of expanding the consciousness, expanding the stories, and expanding the possibilities.
It is for us to really believe that we are creating the news and that evolution at every moment is alive and creating a future for us that we can participate in and effectively create together, and that the media will catch up with us.
On our website, peacetalksradio.com, you can read excerpts and hear both parts of this series on the media and peacemaking, as well as find links to the Institute for Noetic Sciences, the New Mexico Media Literacy Project, and the books and activities of author Duane Elgin. Also at the peacetalksradio.com website, you can hear all of our other programs and find out how to order CDs of our other shows. While you're at the site, you can share your comments on our programs and tell us if what you've heard on a Peace Talk show has had an impact on how you deal with conflict in your daily life. There's also information there about how you can support our programs, all at peacetalksradio.com. Special thanks to Christian DeQuincy and the Noetic Sciences staff, plus the team at La Casa de Maria Conference Center in Santa Barbara, California, for all your help with our recording at the conference. We'd also like to thank KUNM Radio and production director Tristan Klum. Peace Talks is produced by Good Radio Shows Incorporated, a nonprofit media organization that creates programs meant to inform, inspire, and improve the human condition. There's more information about the organization online at goodradioshows.org. That's Good Radio Shows, written as one word, .org. Producer and engineer of our series is Paul Ingalls. The song, 57 Channels and Nothing On, was by Bruce Springsteen. Our theme was written and performed by Allie Adelman. Join us for our next Peace Talks program, Friday morning, August 27th at 8 a.m., when we'll explore conflict resolution strategies that address the problem of bullying in our schools. I'm Suzanne Kreider. Thanks for listening.